You're Going to Die, the podcast, is brought to you by YG2D, a 501c3 nonprofit bringing diverse communities creatively into the conversation of death and dying, inspiring life by unabashedly sourcing our shared mortality. To find out more, visit www.yg2d.com.
If you've been listening to the show for a while and know me at all, you know it means something when I say I cried more talking to this episode's guest than I've ever cried with any other guest ever. You are in for a treat. Yes, everybody. I absolutely wept talking to this guest. And I like to tell people that if we're doing anything different from the 3 billion other people who started a podcast in the last year or so, we have got a guy who cries a lot when he's trying to interview the guests. And we mostly edited out the long stretches of silence where I'm sobbing, mostly. But I do measure it, like I've said before on the show, as my tears being a proximity to truth. And Sonia is a truth speaker like none other. So if you're here because you already know who Sonia is, then you already know you're in for a treat. And if you don't, oh my goodness, you're not going to believe it. So let's just get to it. Sonia Renee Taylor is a New York Times bestselling author of 7 books, transformational thought leader, world-renowned activist, award-winning artist, and founder of the international movement The Body Is Not an Apology. Her work has reached millions of people by exploring the intersections of identity, healing, and social justice using a radical self-love framework. She continues to write, create, speak, teach, and transform lives globally. And it didn't stop there. I feel transformed after talking to Sonia, and I would expect, like I hope these conversations do, and I say it to our guests, I say before we start talking, I say, hey, you know, don't even think about the podcast. What I hope we get right now before we turn this recording into a podcast episode, what I hope we get, because by the way, that might not happen. There is no promise for tomorrow. So what are we sharing here? And wow, did Sonia share. And wow, did we really meet each other here in ways that I deeply needed right now. And then if we do that, the guest and I, then I'm certain the listeners, you, dear listener, will get something you need. I hope you enjoy this episode of You're Going to Die, the podcast with Sonia Renee Taylor.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting, you know, you reached out to me and asked me about doing the podcast, and then the email fell away into the abyss of emails and all the things.
As it does,
right? And then, you know, when you reached out last week, I was like, oh yeah, I do want to do this. And I could not have known that probably, I think about the day before you reached out, that the next day my friend would have a cardiac arrest and it would take 40 minutes to revive her, and she is in the hospital fighting for her life right now. And so, and I just left there by her bedside and with her husband and her mother and her family yesterday, and just got back. And so, and that all of that is happening in, she lives in Georgia, and she was at a sewing retreat in North Carolina and had to be life flighted to Norfolk, Virginia, which just so happens to be where my mother died. And so life is curious in all the ways that it is curious.
Oh my gosh.
And so I'm with some big grief and also, you know, holding what right now is a bit of liminal space, a bit of, we don't know, and, you know, how do we be in the space that is, you know, in between life and death, and be present in that too? you know, in addition to like so much is just moving and completing, and it is a time. It is a particular kind of time. Like I said, I talk astrology often these days. And so we are in Pisces season, and Pisces is the sign of the fullness. So it is, you know, it's universal consciousness. It is the, you know, the drop of water in the ocean, and the ocean in the drop of water, the thing that cannot be separated from. It's the void. And it's also where things go to dissolve before they begin again. And I can feel the energy of that disillusion and the invitation to be totally confused in it, or the invitation to be totally surrendered to it. It's a lot moving right now. That's where I am.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I'm so sorry for what's hard, and love the framing. For some reason, I'm kind of like stuck on disillusioned.
Yeah.
Do you feel like talking about that more? And by the way, like your post yesterday, it's like what I was thinking about it this morning. I was thinking about it like, hey, this here, right here with my friend, and like, here's the list, you know, the zoom out.
Yeah.
And like all fits in this paragraph, you know, like what, you know, it feels like it all belongs together there, you know? Yeah. And I think it's a time where there might be, I promise not to just be the interviewer who cries constantly through every question.
You get to be exactly who you are and how you are.
All right, good. Yeah, I trust that. That's probably where I am. I just feel that invitation with you. Yeah. But I want to say that it feels like a time where there might be an inclination for people to think they can't connect it, you know, like it doesn't, you can't voice it even because of how big this other, you know.
Exactly.
So wondering, I just threw out a couple, maybe threads to pull on there that you grab one of them.
Totally. I mean, that piece about the, like, everything's so big, so who am I to ... And, you know, I think, going back to that idea about Pisces season and the, you know, the drop of water in the ocean, and the ocean in the drop of water, and the fact that they can't be separated, the fact that we are not different from, we are not separate from what is happening in Rafah or in Sudan or in Haiti or in the Congo or in any of the other places where atrocities are happening down the street next door. Like, the reality is that all of it is us. And if all of it is us and all of it matters and all liberation matters, then it matters that my liberation matters, right? If what I believe is that we all deserve to be free and that we all deserve the fullness of our grief as part of the expression of our liberation, then my grief is included in that. My pain is included in that. And it actually isn't until I tend to the truth of my own grief, my own sorrow, my own pain, that I am in the capacity to tend to the grief and sorrow and pain of the world. It's not possible to get there otherwise. And I think we've spent a lot of time trying to be from the outside in. And all of everything I've said for the last decade has been that I'm convinced it's the inside out. And so I know that Jill is not less important than a child in Gaza. And a child in Gaza is not less important than a child in Israel. And if we actually understood that, we wouldn't be in these circumstances right now. You know? It's all true.
Your friend is Jill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Her name is Jill Bates Moore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely wildly powerful. I wonder on your end what it is to like have a following hold you and her right now. But I'm feeling that, you know, I got her yesterday, but I'm feeling it right now. There's a line, I'm not going to remember who it's from. And Chelsea Coleman, our creative director, wrote a song that has this lyric, but is that like my liberation, you know, your liberation is bound up in mine, or my, you know,
Lila Watson quote, our liberation is bound up together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
I am wanting to go to like the email exchange because like you said, like the email dropped off into the ether for a bit. And then I just have a system because I know that happens. Yeah. And I sent you another note like a month after that first one. And you just mentioned being in kind of in transition. And I'm wondering if there's more to share about that. You know, it's like easy to be like, let's, you know, we said this already. Let's talk about the body is not, you know, an apology. Yeah. But like, I imagine there's ways this is like, still here, obviously, with you yeah. and how you're in the world, and like another lifetime, maybe, you Totes. Know, in some ways.
Totes.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if the way in might include articulating more of that, and like the transition, sort of also before this happened to Jill, there's much going yeah. on, maybe different endings, and wondering if there's room to talk about that today.
Yeah, totally. I've been. You know, I think one of the things that appealed to me about being in this conversation with you, you know, again, I'm going to talk a lot of astrology because it's just what's present in me today. Anybody who knows me knows that I have said many times over that I am a sixth placement Scorpio. And so anybody who knows anything about astrology, Scorpio is a fixed water sign. It's often referred to as like the most intense sign in the zodiac. And I have six placements in my chart, all in the same location in Scorpio. And Scorpio's signature is death and rebirth. And there's a way in which, you know, when I saw the title of the podcast, you're going to die.
Yeah. All right.
I was like,
that's my invitation. And I mean, I'm thinking of when you first got into this.
Yeah.
When you look at, you look and you see. Oh,
I was outraged. You know, like, I was utterly outraged. I was like, what the fuck? Who did this? And then I was mad at myself. Like, I picked this. Did I pick this? Like, it was definitely this feeling of like, I've been punished by the universe. Like, what did I do wrong?
God,
you know?
Totally.
And I spent a lot of time orienting toward my birth chart in that way. Like, what did I do? That's transformed. You know, part of the death and rebirth cycle is like a certain kind of death to the victim story that I can get comfortable in.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, I just got the chills on that one.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in 2020 was what it felt like a particular kind of catalyst of a.
Okay, Sonia, wait, hold on, because I know this is the next place to go, and you just said something that feels kind of important, and you could be like, there's not more to say about that, but there was a question when, before you said the victim, you know, like that kind of confrontation that you got to because of this. There was also the like, is there past life stuff that you kind of consider with this? Is there like, is there something where it's like, no, for sure, I'm responsible for this. Or like when we come into the world, we pick our astrology, we pick when we come in. Yeah. You could be like, whoa, that's another podcast episode. We need to keep going. But I'm thinking about that, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, okay. I think it could be its own podcast episode, but I'm happy to talk about it. For me, at least in sort of my
Let's
cosmology.
Let's just pit stop there for a sec.
Yeah. It's not even the idea, because it doesn't feel like an idea. It feels like a felt experience in my beingness that I have been here a bunch of times and I've done this a bunch of times. So there's something that very much resonates in me energetically around the idea of past lives and having been here many, many times. And I do believe that we are born for the time that we are in, that we are exactly who we are supposed to be, for exactly what it is we are supposed to do in exactly the time we are supposed to do it. And for me, once I related to that, once I shifted the story I was telling myself to move from the story of like, I have been punished by God, the stars, the universe, whoever it is that does the thing. And when I moved from that perspective and moved into the like, I am part of creation, which means that I too created my existence, right? Like that my existence isn't happenstance or a thing that happened over there and was put on me, but that I meaning this beingness that is beyond my identification as Sonia, my identification as, you know, this particular package I came in. But the essence of me, the source of me that cannot be separated from source, the individual drop of water that is the ocean, that part of my beingness knew there was a thing for me to do, knew that this was the time for me to do it, and knew exactly what would need to happen and what conditions would need to exist for that to come into being. And that to me is the experience that I relate to with my birth chart now. When I look at those six placements in Scorpio, I'm like, oh, I needed every single one of them to do my assignment. And I have a gratitude today. Right? I mean, first of all, I'm like, girl, what was going on before that you needed all of this to do this assignment?
That's right. That's
and
right.
Then I said, that part is not my business. Like, actually, that's above my pay grade right now. I'll ask when I get back to source. But for now, in this assignment, obviously, I needed it. And actually, it's interesting. One of the things that I find true and when I look at birth charts and when I'm intuiting birth charts for people is I can get a bit of a glimpse about what was happening before that I would need this much energy. Because the language of it is all weird, but
sure,
whatever it was that was happening in a previous incarnation of this soul essence, that incarnation really liked comfort. Really liked, just was like, I want to taste all the good things and feel all the soft things and have all the delicious experiences and chill. I want a life of leisure and comfort. And I, you know, apparently had that. And in order to pull me out of a particular sort of complacency and comfort and beauty where I can sit and then not do any, you know, left to my own devices, I wouldn't do anything. I would eat really good food. I'd have a lot of fun sex and I'd live on a lavish pink velvet couch and I would chill. Like I would, and people would come and visit me, but I would probably never leave the house. And I would just live my best, most obscure, lavish life in the far reaches of some place in the woods. And it's very clear to me that there stuff I'm supposed to do, and not even supposed to do, but there are offerings that want to come through me. And if left to my own devices, they would never come through because I would be chilling. And so there are six planets of Scorpio that are like, no, you must go. Something must compel you to transform such that you might be an agent of transformation. That's the assignment. And here's all the energy that you need to go do that thing, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, like I hear you and can we do my astrology real quick?
It's like,
we'll maybe somehow. Yeah, exactly. But, and I would do it. I actually would do it on the podcast, but what I want to stay with you and this, but where it's hitting me is like right in the center of the chest. And it does feel like I know it, like I relate to it. And that there's part of me that, you know, my version of it is the part of me that badly wants to be on the couch, you know, late at night in the dark, chomping on sugary treats and just in heaven, you know, watching a show or a movie or whatever. And I've got like four events this week. And the amount of energy I have where it's like, do I have to do this tonight? Do I have to? And then when I'm there, it's like all in for sure. But that there's this kind of pull between, you know, and thank goodness then for the planets that
something
compel.
Has to get you off the couch. Exactly.
That's right.
All of the stars have aligned.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Thank you for that.
Totally.
So 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2020 felt like, you know, life was like, she needs an off the couch moment. she's gotten real comfy. You know, I had moved to New Zealand. I'd been living in New Zealand for 5 years. I was comfy. I was very comfy. Mm-hmm. And And life was like, yeah, that's not it. And, you know, I think the piece that's even more important is that there's a way in which the comfort was sitting on an illusion, right? The comfort was sitting on the illusion that if I just made it soft and nice enough and I just complied enough and I just was easy enough, right? If I could just be easy enough, then nothing would be disrupted, right? That these things that I built to hold all of my, you know, stories of abandonment and my stories of loss and my stories of shame and too muchness, that if I could just, you know, if I could make it pretty enough and I could make it comfortable enough and I could put someone in it and make them comfortable enough and you know, give them just as much love as I could, then none of the things that kick up those stories would happen, right? And inside of, and I built a really pretty glass house. And in March of 2020, it came crashing down. And I got thrown out of it abruptly over the course of 4 days. Life was like, oh, so all the places where you are holding so tightly, don't change this thing. Life was like, and what if it all changes right now? What if everything falls away right now? What will you do? And, you know, so I, in the course of those 4 days, I had gotten back from the United States. I had been on tour. I came back. My fur baby of 12 years, who I'd had since she was 8 weeks old, was sick. And I didn't know what was going on. And I took her to the emergency vet. And that was on a Tuesday, and by Wednesday, they told me that she had liver cancer and that they didn't know how long she was going to last. I was living with my partner. We had moved into this house where I was going to be doing radical self-love retreats in my home. And I canceled the retreat because when I flew back to New Zealand, there were like 5 cases of COVID and I wasn't really sure what was going to happen. So I canceled the retreats. And so that Wednesday, I found out that that Tuesday, I found out that my dog had cancer. That Wednesday, my partner told me that they were in love with their coworker. That Thursday, we ended the relationship. That Friday, the nation went into what ultimately was a 5-month lockdown. My partner moved out that Saturday. And 5 days after that, my dog died. And I was in the house that I thought I was going to be holding retreats and radical self-love retreats in. I was in that house by myself. Dealing with what it means to have this life you constructed out of a set of beautiful and comfortable illusions fall apart. And it was in that moment that set off a course that I've been on for the last 4 years, where life has been like, all of it is impermanent, Sonia. There's nothing that you can hold tight enough to make it stay forever. And so if all of it is impermanent, what are you going to do with this moment, this one single precious moment you have? Because all the rest of it is so not guaranteed. And it kicked off this journey of I've been sort of a roaming nomad for the last 2 years. I moved out of my home in New Zealand. I left New Zealand and sort of been, not even sort of, I have been living out of a suitcase for the last 2 years. I gave away all my things. You know, I was like, oh, I'm really living one of them weird novels there. You know? I was like, oh, this is, I don't know whose imagination I've been plopped into, but this is not my version. And it has been miraculous, and it has been profound, and it has made me, you know, this morning I sat on this deck in this Airbnb that I'm at in North Carolina, and, you know, I wept for my friend, and I wept for, you know, my stepfather who I saw right before I left Norfolk, Virginia, and he had 2 strokes and I didn't know, and he's not, you know, I'm like, and I was just like, oh, it's so much. And then I breathed into it and I said, I am right size for this life. I am right sized. And in the places where I am not, life expand me, make me bigger so that I can hold it all.
Everybody, just a quick note to let you know, if you didn't already, that the episodes you're listening to, you actually can get them a week earlier than everybody else. The general public gets the episode, but a week before that, our Patreon patrons get the episode. So if you want to start hearing episodes like even right now today with this episode's release, you can get another episode by becoming a patron on patreon.com/YG2D for as little as $2 a month. Are you kidding me? $2 is nothing. And $2 is so much to us. Like $2 is nothing, like you lost it. $2 to us, like a bunch of people giving $2, adds up to us feeling support for the podcast. It's free. So why not like give us a couple bucks a month? And by the way, get something everybody else isn't getting, which is these episodes a week early. So go check out patreon.com/YG2D and become a You're Going to Die the Podcast patron today.
This was only for me. Yeah, that was it. It was just like this thing you thought you were offering to others. No, it's for you. It's for you. And actually, until you, it felt so clear to me when once all of those things had fallen away that there was a deeper level of this journey of radical self-love that was trying to call me. You know, it was like, you got here and here is good, but what's underneath it? Can you get to the core? And, you know, I am a master of self-deception when I want to be. You know, I can really, you know, I once had a friend tell me that I am like, she was like, it's like you have a bunch of like hidden trap doors under your floor, and like underneath it is like a gun and gold bars. And I never felt more seen in my whole life. Yeah. I was like, yes, yeah, that is me. And then I was like, oh, right. I was like, but what that means is like, I've the story of protection and the story of my abundance is a thing I've hidden even from myself. And what does it look like to pull up the floorboards and not have my protection or my abundance, something that I have to hide from myself or from anything else? And so it's really been a process of being like, what's under the floorboard, Sonia? Like, can you bring it to the light? And one of the things that was under there is this like giving, you know, like offering all of, you know, like, I'm going to help you heal and I'm going to help you heal. And I'm going to help you heal. Yeah. And the ways in which it was oftentimes and in some ways a strategy to avoid my own work. You know, it was a wonderful place to hide.
Yeah. Yeah. I do know. Yeah. These tears are like, because I'm feeling that. You know, and you know, it's wild how much work we put into that effort, you know, how much effort we put into that in a way that, you know, what it feels like now. And I want to say it's different, you know, what's different from where I'm sitting to what you described happened in 2020 is, you know, it's this like potential burnout on that, like the way we were self-destruct if we keep operating that way, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's how I got to New Zealand was, you know, when I started the body is not an apology. It came through me in 2011. And then, mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, it's supposed to be a company and we're supposed to do all these things. And, I had a giant team of like 27 people and seven, on all the continents. And we were doing all of this stuff. And I was trying so hard to do the thing, to help do the thing, to get this message out. And by the time, by the time 2017 had arrived, I was so burnt out. I couldn't do anymore. I just often tell people that I moved to, an island, off an island at the bottom of the world and up 50 flights mm-hmm. of steps. That's how far away I needed to go mm-hmm. from this thing mm-hmm. I had built that was really just like, again, another place to put all of the, if I do it this way, then maybe I'll be loved. Right. The part of me that that was still externalizing this radical self-love concept, even as I was building.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Just so much of this resonates. Are you talking? It sounds like I wouldn't be surprised to hear that you're like, you've talked about this publicly a lot already, or does this feel like kind of new to air it this way with me? Or I don't mean to air it, but putting new words to it or what?
It's still new. It isn't, I've begun, like it's a place where I've begun to sort of tap into it. Part of what's happened is that things got really, really quiet when I began that, the traveling 2 years ago. Like everything just sort of got very quiet and very inward. And so I wasn't doing as much speaking. I wasn't presenting as mm-hmm. much. I wasn't like all of that stuff slowed down anyway. And I think part of mm-hmm. that was because I really needed to integrate what it was that I had been moving through. And so I mm-hmm. feel myself on the just outside of the chrysalis phase of this, of this emerging. And so it is indeed starting to be more part of my conversation when I'm having conversations with people, but it still feels fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It feels fresh. Feels fresh to me. There's a way reading your book that I'm rifling through it too after reading it, like looking at the chapter heads, and feeling like it's not missing, but expecting a whole chapter on grief. And I know there's like room in there for it, obviously, but I'm not sure. Maybe you can make the connection or you can talk about like, it doesn't feel like it relates, but this feels like this is a stage, right? It is like death and rebirth. It is grief and heartbreak. It is loss. And maybe more of it than, I guess maybe more of it all at once than you'd ever experienced, but maybe more of it than ever. I don't know. Like what had your experience been, I guess, in a way coming through the body is not an apology into that work where grief really was manifesting or getting articulated or helping even crystallize and refine what the work you were doing.
Yeah.
Is that a fair question? Is there a way in there?
Yeah. Oh, there's absolutely a way in there. I think that I am just now in the season of a different kind of clarity around the scope and magnitude of grief as part of radical self-love work. I knew that it was there. I think I talk about in the book the ways in which, part of, I think in this conversation of the three pieces and making peace with what we don't understand and making, peace with not knowing, inside of those making peace is the inevitable grieving of the idea that we ever had to do that to begin with, right? In order to fully come into radical self-love, we have to grieve the stories that we created that told us we were going to be enough if we did, got to, mm-hmm. right? I think that's always been woven in, but there's an explicit nature of grief that I feel like the collective is being asked to reckon with. And I don't think, again, I really do operate from the perspective that we are right on time for what there is for us to do. And I don't think that we're a culture that is really deeply rooted in escapism and avoidance, right? We are really deeply rooted in don't feel the thing. And here are all the external things we're going to offer you so that you don't feel the thing. And of course, you can only shove things in a closet or under the floorboards for so long before the thing starts to buckle and stuff starts to come up and it becomes an untenable situation. And it feels to me as if, as a society, as a collective, we have reached the point of untenable. The thing can't be stuffed anymore. It is falling out of the seams. Our grief, our sorrow, our rage, our despair is literally spilling out. And I think that we are in the moment where the invitation to be with the full scope and magnitude of our grief is here. I think that, you know, one of the things that's true about me and my bazillion Scorpio placements is that part of the assignment is go first, Sonia. You go first. And then part of you go first part, because what I believe I'm to do with that is to show people that it's doable, right? To be so visible and plain and transparent about how I'm not a superhero, how, you know, I am a kid whose mama was on crack and who had abandonment issues and who was a sex addict and who I am all of the things that shoving it away can make. And I am all of the things that healing it can make. I am all of the things that choosing to feel what there is to feel and survive it makes possible. And that's where we are right now. I believe that, you know, there are many of us, you included, this podcast included, that's like, we can do this thing. We can do this thing if we are honest, if we are brave, courageous in a particular kind of way, fear-facing, as I call it in the book. And if we don't try to do it alone, right? Then we get this opportunity, this time right now, to actually grieve what there is to grieve such that we can plant and grow what there is to plant and grow.
Yeah. Yeah, I had this vision in front of the community in San Quentin Tuesday night. Where it was, and I said it to them, and I was tripping out. You know, I'm in there. I just, when those grief spaces open up, I feel like I'm like a conduit. Is this something coming through me? Like the tears and all the, you know, and I'm just sitting there thinking like, and I said it out loud, that my tears, I just said, I'm seeing them watering like soil and seeing flowers growing from them. Yes. It's so basic. It's not, you know, it's like, but like that's what it
but
felt
it's
like.
So
that's
true.
What you're talking about.
Yeah. Like we simply, you know, we feel like, oh, this, you know, it's like, oh, it's not quite profound enough. No, it's absolutely literally true.
Yeah,
it's like our tears literally are watering a thing that wants to grow. Like we don't have to make it, you know, we do not have to become, you know,
you're right.
Roomy to like the simplicity of it is the truth. And that's the invitation. It's like, it really is as simple as cry.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I think of you as an invitation. You know, you described it as first, me first. And that's an invitation, right? I mean, it is this is your way. It's not and I don't know how you can relate to this or not in these years since the book came into being and connected to so many all around the world. The feeling of like the leader, you know, the role that we start to get put into, the pedestal we get put on, and how active we have to be to like bring ourselves back down. And I mean us, like you said, hey, like here's me, here's my humanness. Part of the invitation here, like you said, is all of that too. It isn't the healing alone.
Yeah.
And so then like giving people, like I say, it's like, I'm not a, by the way, like not a psychologist, not a nurse, not a hospice doctor, none of the things that get the certificate on the wall. And so in a way, first of all, it doesn't pay well to not have the certificate on the wall, right. But okay, that's another conversation. But what it does offer is like, this is ours.
Yeah.
You know, like this is our, this can be our way, you know?
Yeah. I tell people, yeah. You know, these days, every time I get on a stage, I start up and saying, look, y'all have to listen to me. I don't know shit. I was like, let me disabuse you immediately of the notion that I have some answers for you. I was like, I don't have answers. I do know I ask good questions. That I do know. And I know that I ask myself good questions, and I'm here to share some of them good questions that I've been in, and that together we get to collectively source what the possibilities are, what the answers could be, you know? And I don't, part of the collapse in 2020 was the collapse of Sonia, the leader. Sonia, who was supposed to facilitate anything other than her own healing. And then to be generous and loving and humble enough to be like, hey, y'all, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, I want to invite you to maybe, like, if you see something in it that resonates, cool, come together. Let's do it together because our liberation is bound up together. But it's not because it's not because I'm here to lead. You know, I told a friend years ago, I was like, you know, if you, you know, you know, you would be wise. You, if you see a Black woman moving, you would be wise to follow her because she's probably on her way to liberation. But you're not following her because she's decided to lead. You're following her because you'd be silly not to, because you know where she's going. But it's not because she's just signed up to take you. It's not because she's signed up to lead you anyplace. It's because, oh, someone's going a direction I want to go. Let me walk with him and let me be of service while I do that.
Path too, right?
Yeah. You know?
Right. Yeah.
But it's not about leader. It's not about, we need, you know, like there's so many people being leaders and we can see what that is. I'm like, what does it mean to be, you know, Gwendolyn Brooks says we are each other's bond and multitude. What does it look like to be each other's bond? Right. It's like, I necessitate you and you necessitate me, which doesn't mean that the burden and the responsibility of leading is on any one person. It is a shared and distributed energy that allows us all to have the chance to rest when we need to rest, but also to step up when it is ours to step up. You know, I'm interested in just new models that allow us all to hold what there is to be held.
That was what was coming up for me, you know, is thinking about how you came into your work with The Body Is Not an Apology. And you've kind of answered this question already, but I was thinking, first of all, not to get too ahead of you. it's like, you're just outside the chrysalis. I'm not like, what's the new book? You know, cause that's the question that someone's going to ask, right? They asked you already. Someone asked you already. They already asked you. Yeah. But then better to kind of frame it that way. It's like, what's different, you know, what feels possible, you know, in different ways, both to avoid what happened, right? Which is like how somehow that path led to you, you know, in 2020 being confronted in all those ways. And also like something feels inauthentic about that. Right. Cause there is a way that it's like, no, you want to keep that happening kind of. Right. I mean, that's your,
I have six placements in Scorpio. Whether I want it to or not, there's a certain amount of that's what it is. Boo boo. So there's a part, you know, but that too is part of the practices. Can I make peace with that? Can I make peace with that? I have come here to, you know, to die and come back and die and come back and to allow that process to continue to move through me. Part of what is what I have been praying for inside of my own journey as of late is, you know, today I was just really in prayer and in reflection. And I said, like, you know, make me the eye of the storm. I want to be still in the center. Like everything else is going to do what it's going to do. I was born under the stars that I was born under, which means that there is a certain amount of transformation and falling apart. And there is that cycle is part of my beingness. And the truth of the matter is it is part of life, right? It is part of all of our beingness. That is what is true about life, is that shit is going to die and shit is going to be born. And that is what is truth. The question is, in the center of that cycle, can I be still? Can I be fully present? Can I be the calm in the midst of all that is constantly moving? And I have realized that part of what gives me access to that stillness is less doing and more being. That life has said, hey, Sonia, you've spent 47 years doing a lot, a whole bunch. And it's been beautiful and it's produced wonderful things. And I'm so grateful it's come through me and into the world. And today life is like, if you were to just be, like, just be. And to only have what moves through you arise from your beingness. What then? You know, and I don't have an answer to the what then yet. I'm in the experiment, you know, which is why when people are like, what's the next thing? I'm like, being. I'll let you know when it turns out. Y'all watch. I'm watching too. You know, but in that, something comes up, right? It's like actually in my beingness, in my trusting that there is nothing for me to do other than to just be this being right here. And that from there, something gets ignited that wants to come into the world. And my job is to be clear and still enough such that it can. And, you know, it's a weird place. You know, my dad was like, what are you working on? I was like, being. And my sister was like, what's your new project? I was like, being.
You are saying it. You're saying it.
And everybody was looking at me like,
to people. Yeah.
Huh? You know, because the first people start asking very practical questions. How are you going to eat?
Sure,
where are you going, right? You know?
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, you know? And yeah. I don't mean like, well, can you tell me where, when I'm going to eat and how? But like, that feels real. I mean, when I think about death and dying, like I'd chase it down because I need the medicine. You know, I wouldn't do this. Like you've spoke your version of, I wouldn't do you're going to die if I wasn't like, God, do I need that medicine? Right. I need that moment of like, oh, I'm going to die someday. What a relief. Not, and I don't mean like suicide. I'm just talking about like the medicine of that and how it grounds me. And then I'm like, shit, I don't know if I'm going to have a salary next month.
Yeah.
You know, and then that the world does that stuff. And I, okay, wait, hold on. This isn't a question. I'm not even going to try to ask you that. I'm not like, so what do I do? How do I deal with that? All right. You want to talk about it? Let's do it.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I want to hear that. Let's do that. But what I want to say, and it may connect to what you're about to say, which is, ooh, I love the center of the tornado. I love the eye of the storm. I love it because you belong there.
Yeah.
I love it because you, Sonia, and then yes, all of us, but you're first. You went first, okay? So you, like having all those six planets and all that, then that's yours. That's like a part of you. It's a part of who you are. It's like you don't live in the storm and not know where the eye is. You know, I mean, did you relate to that? Am I getting carried away? Or
no.
is it that? It's like, okay, go to that home. That's home.
That was it. Oh, let me tell you about that. The fact that you just said that is so, wow. So one of, you know, we'll stay on the astrology thing. There is a point in everyone's chart called Chiron. Chiron is an asteroid and it represents what we call our wounded healer. It is the part of us that is that is our core wound, the location of our core wound, and that the tenderness of it, you know, in the mythology of Chiron, Chiron was half man, half centaur, and born of woman and God. And so consequently he had both, you know, both properties, the supernatural properties and mortal properties, and was injured. And because of the supernatural and mortal properties, this injury that would have been fatal did not kill him. He couldn't die. But because he was also mortal, he had to live with the consistent pain of this thing that would have been fatal in any other condition. Mm-hmm. And from that pain and his effort to heal that pain, he created all of these healing modalities that ended up helping others, you know, that helped other people learn to heal as he just learned how to be with this pain that could not be resolved. And so in you say that the center of the storm is home. Chiron in my birth chart is in the fourth house, which is the house of home. And it is my core wound, is the story of home and the story of the location. What is my home? Who is my home? And I have said since I began this journey, I am my own home. And it feels like that you've cleared this beautiful moment where you just clarified something that felt even more powerful to me, which is like, right, there is a way in which I am the storm, right? That the energy that moves through me is the energy of a certain amount of destruction and resurrection in that process. And that the center of me, that still place, is indeed home. And that life has been trying to get me to go home since the moment I arrived here. Sonia, you can go home at any moment. You can just go home. And that is the center of me. You know, and I do believe that it is the center of us, that there is that in us that is consistent and unwavering and safe and abundant despite all the things that are moving, and that life is calling us back to that location. And that if we were to move from there, which is beingness, right? If we were to move from there, then all these other things that we see, these wars and destructions that we've predicated on the idea of home, that they would not need to be, because we would never be without it. We would never seek it any place but right here in the center of our beingness.
I think it'd be nice with our podcast to change the star rating to tears rating. So you could rate how much the episode made you cry with how many tears out of 5. For example, I would rate this episode 5 out of 5 tears for me. What's your rating? Maybe I should add this on like the Spotify survey, which by the way, we can do. And speaking of what you can do in a podcast app, speaking of ratings, go rate and review the show. Did this episode, did this conversation matter to you? Well, it matters to us if you let us know. So go into your Apple Podcast app, your Spotify app, and rate and review the show. Send us some words of acknowledgement. We might even read them on the episodes, like your words of acknowledgement, how you feel about the show. When you put it in your ratings and reviews in your podcast app, we read it, and we could read it here on one of our episodes. So go do that. All these things, by the way, when I'm directing you to go like do things online, show notes, go to the show notes. Everything's linked up there, including our Patreon link to become a patron for You're Going to Die, the podcast. You can find it in the show notes. And that's not all you'll find in the show notes for this episode. You'll find several ways to support or connect to Sonia Renee Taylor, including their website, SoniaReneeTaylor.com, their Instagram handle, @SoniaReneeTaylor, and Venmo, kick Sonia some cash, support Sonia and what they're up to, doing work, activist work, writing, creating, changing the world, transforming the world. It needs support. So thank you, Sonia, for being on the show. Gosh, changed my life just getting to meet you in this way. I hope it was wonderful for all of you too. And if you want to get more of Sonia, check out the show notes for all the options. Speaking of supporting people who are doing things in the world who need financial contributions, we are a 501c3 nonprofit, and we are in the middle of our annual community fundraiser, raising $60,000 to do more of what we do with our prison program, our hospice program, our events, our workshops, our work with elders, our work with cancer patients, and our podcast. So you can go into the show notes and click the Give Butter fundraiser link and contribute to our fundraiser. We right now, like as I'm recording this, are almost at 2/3 of the way to our $60,000 goal. We had three huge events very recently, like just last week, and we kicked the butt out of our fundraiser. We kicked it off incredibly. We've almost raised $40,000 already. There's a little bit of match program money left from our community of matchers. So if you want to contribute right now, as you're listening to this, you might actually get your contribution matched. So go into the show notes, find that link, and support what we're doing here at You're Going to Die. And thank you so much for listening. You've done so much already just by listening to the podcast, and share it with the world. If this podcast episode meant something to you, send it to a friend, send it to 5 friends, 10 friends. The word of mouth for a podcast is like gold. So if it mattered to you even a little bit, send it to someone you care about. Other than that, thanks for listening, everybody. So glad you're here. So good to be in your ear.